And we're holding on Samach Gimel Amud Bey's six lines from the bottom. We started discussing yesterday, you have the Torah tells us that there's a case, that there are cases in which a person has to pay Tashlumei Kefil. We talked about there's the case of a regular Ganav. Now, with a regular Ganav, the Torah does say Pasuk, and we're going to be discussing that Pasuk extensively today. There's a Pasuk that says that a Ganav pays Tashlumei Kefil. However, that pasuk is talking, that pasuk mentions various kinds of animals. So you wouldn't necessarily know from that that a regular ganav pays kefil when it comes to other things as well. And you also wouldn't know that in the case of a ganav, you don't need a shur for him to be chayav kefil. What we were dealing with was you have cases where the Torah says, where the Torah mentions kefil and it mentions the concept of a shur. And it mentions that it applies to other things other than animals as well. So we said there are two psukim about that concept in connection with the dinim of shomrim. So we have one braisa said that actually both of them are talking about the case of toyin tainis ganav, not about a regular ganav, but a case of a shomer who claims that the object that was entrusted to him was stolen, and he swears about it, and afterwards it turns out Adam show up and say that he actually took it himself. So we said there are two psukim in that connection. One braisa says that both psukim are talking about toyin tainis ganav, and the other braisa says that one's talking about a regular ganav, and the other one is talking about toyin tainis ganav. And we discussed, according to the first opinion, why would you need two psukim to tell us the same thing, because we said, you have the parallel case of toyin tainis ovad, where he claims that it was lost, where there we don't have the same dinim of him paying kefil if it turns out that he took it, and we went through various details about that. So now we're going to discuss this point further, and we're going to discuss, so according to the opinion that both psukim are talking about toyin tainis ganav, then where do we know that the same dinim apply to a regular ganav in the sense that it's that his payment of kefil applies to anything? As we said, as we learned in the Mishnah, that kefil applies to everything. So far, according to that mandamar, we would know that about toyin tainis ganav, and that it's not the case with toyin tainis ovad, but how would he know that it applies to a regular ganav as well? So this is what the Gemara takes up over here. So, according to the opinion that of the two psukim that mention the concept of paying kefil for anything, leaving aside the pasuk about regular ganav that says mishurad chamurad sechayim shnayim yishalim, which now the Gemara is going to take up and discuss in some length. Where you have two psukim in connection with shomrim, where the pasuk mentions the concept of a ganav and the concept of paying double. So we said one man de omer holds that one's referring to a regular ganav and the other one is referring to a toyin tainis ganav, and the other one had said that both of them are referring to toyin tainis ganav. So b'shleim l'man de omer chad b'ganav chad b'toyin tainis ganav shapu. So according to their opinion that one's talking about a regular ganav and the other's talking about toyin tainis ganav, then good, then that's how we know that a regular ganav pays kefil for anything that he stole, not just for animals. Elamanda omatavaya with toyin tainis ganav, but according to the opinion, according to the first braisa that said that both psukim by shomrim are actually referring to a shomer who is claiming that the thing was stolen and that turns out that he took it himself, well then, ganav atzma minole. So then where do we know by a regular ganav that he's paying kefil, which is to say, how we know that it's that he's paying for any that he's paying kefil for anything? The Pnei Yeshua points out, because after all, the psukim, the earlier pasuk that says im hi motzi simotzi biyadei hagneva, if we find the stolen object in his possession, etc., then he pays double. We would only know from that where what it says in the pasuk. It mentions over there three kinds of animals, and then it says that he pays shnayim mishalim. We would also only know that if it's found in his hand, not if he had gotten rid of it or resold it or whatever. So we need a pasuk to tell us that the whole concept of according to this opinion, we need a pasuk to tell us that the whole concept of tashlumei kefil applies to anything and applies no matter what the ganav did with it afterwards. So where do we know that from? So the answer is, and you're going to argue you can learn it by a kavachomer from the case of Toyin Tainas Ganav. So you would say, if the case of a shomer who claims that the thing was stolen, and it turns out that he took it himself, where it came to him beheter in the first place, he was given it to him, it was given to him to watch to begin with, and yet we're making him chayav kefil for everything, how much more so a regular Ganav who to begin with got the thing illegally. Well, the problem with that is, if you're going to learn that way, Daya Levomen Adin, Lias Kenodin, then fine, we can learn from that that it would apply to anything, but we would have to apply the rule of Daya, as we discussed earlier in the Masechta, and we would have to say, Malahalan Bishwur, Avkan Bishwur. Then we would have to say that just as with a Toyin Tainas Ganav, when does he become Chayav for Kefil? Only if he swore falsely to his claim. So then we would have to say that a regular Ganav would be the case as well, that he'd only be Chayav Kefil only if he was brought to Beis Din and swore that he hadn't stolen or that he hadn't stolen or that he paid it back or whatever, and then we would make him pay the kefil. And of course, we know it's not so. We know that he's chayav kefil regardless. So how are we learning that?
You don't need this daya actually to prove that, the kavachomer doesn't work. Kavachomer in that direction doesn't work because, it's not a kavachomer to begin with.
Why not?
Because the situation of the one who stole it for himself is worse than the situation that the one who didn't steal it for himself and the regular Ganav. So how do you call that a kavachomer?
One second. Both of them stole it for themselves. Both of them are keeping it for themselves. The difference is the shomer, how did it get into his house in the first place? Because the other guy, the owner of it, came to him and said, Yankel, do me a favor and watch this for me. As opposed to the Ganav broke into Yankel's house, let's say, and stole it from him. But either way, the point is that now he has something in his possession that belongs to the other guy.
One is a shomer and one is a regular Ganav?
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. Toyin Tainas Ganav means that Reuven goes to Shimon and says, do me a favor and watch this thing for me. So Shimon becomes a shomer for it. Then when Reuven comes to get back his thing, where is it? Shimon tells him it was stolen. Then later on, Adam comes and say that actually Shimon kept it for himself. A regular Ganav.
So that's what I'm...
Yeah, a regular Ganav.
Right.
So Shimon stole it from Reuven.
Right. So the shomer is not a cow. The shomer is already a chomer. Why do you say the shomer is a cow?
Well, because to begin with, both of them are doing wrong by stealing, but the difference is the shomer, to begin with, has it in his possession legally, because he was given it as a shomer, as opposed to the ganav.
Exactly. Because he's betraying
the guy's trust. I mean, that's a nice moral point, maybe, I guess, that it's worse when somebody betrays your trust where you thought you trusted him. But, as a matter of halacha, we're not going to say that makes him a chomer. It still makes him a cow in the sense, in the end, both he and the ganav have done something wrong, but the difference is he, to begin with, received it in a way of heter and the other one didn't.
The fiduciary is much stronger for the shomer than for the regular ganav.
That's true, and therefore we're being machai of him in cases where pshia, in cases where he was careless with it, and
exactly.
Whatnot. Where he stole, that's fine as far as that. But where he stole it, ultimately stealing is stealing. So if anything, we can't say that the stealing itself. We can't say the stealing itself is more chomer, but we can say that we can say that the stealing itself. How was he in a position to get it in the first place? Was it the heter or was it the issur? That makes a difference. So therefore, we would have used it as a kal vachomer. But again, the problem is that if we do that, then we have to apply daya, and then the result is that the regular ganav is going to require a shvur. All right, we need to go on. We can take this up later.
Yeah, it's debatable.
So the Gemara says, Naftalim is Tana Dvei Chizkiah. The answer is we're going to learn the case of a regular ganav from a braisa from the yeshiva of Chizkiah. Meaning, in other words, that again, the pasuk itself is just going to, the pasuk itself just mentions animals. We need Tana Dvei Chizkiah to show how the pasuk in connection with a regular ganav, a pasuk which everybody agrees is regarding a regular ganav, namely the pasuk Im Himatzi Simatzi B'Yadei Agneva, we need Tana Dvei Chizkiah, as we're going to go through the Gemara now, to show us how we learn from it that a regular ganav is chayav kefil for everything. So the Tana Dvei Chizkiya, you have like this, the pasuk goes, im hi motzei simotzei b'yodei hagneva, if the stolen object is found in his possession, mishur ad chamur ad seh, from an ox to a donkey to a sheep, chayim, and they're alive, shnayim shalim, he has to pay double. Now, again, on the face of it, the pasuk is talking about only three kinds of animals and only when they're alive. So now we have to work out how we know that that includes other things as well. So, starts like this. Yoima shur ugneva. Now, on the face of it, the pasuk could have just mentioned the word shur and the word gneva, a stolen object, and we would have included everything. We would have had basically a pratoklal. And then we would have said the pratoklal, then we darish in and includes everything. And now the Gemara is going to ask later, or the Braisa itself is going to ask later, what do you mean? The fact is, it says Gneva first. But anyway, so the Ilukach, the problem is, if it said that way, if it only said Shur and then Gneva, Hayisi Omer, then you would still say, you know what, the Klal is not necessarily including everything. Ma Prat Mefurish, Korav Vagabi Mizbeach, the Prat, a Shur, is an animal that can be brought as a korban, Afkol, Korav Vagabi Mizbeach. Maybe the concept of kefil, maybe the word gneva, which is broadening that, would still only include things that are going to be brought on the mizbeach. Because now the Gemara is going to ask later, what do you mean? We're not talking about a klal, a prat, a klal on the face of it. We're talking about a prat, a klal, and then shouldn't we include everything? Again, we're going to get back to that point soon. So what kind of thing would you add? What other kind of animal can you bring on the Mizbeach? Set. Well, you would have brought in, you would have said in that case, if you only had the word shur and the word gneva, you would have said, fine, the din applies also to sheep. Well then, in that case, you don't need. The fact is, the pasuk does explicitly say a sheep. So therefore, that includes a sheep, making it clear, therefore, that it's not meant to be darshan as a prat or klal like that, because the only thing you would have included from the klal so far would have been something which is anyway listed explicitly in the pasuk. Now, Tosfos points out, it actually says seh last in the pasuk. It says chamur first. But the Gemara is bringing them out of order in order to, the Gemara is bringing them out of order, the Braisa is bringing them out of order in order to make a clear discussion. What we mean by that, in other words, is the Kos HaYeshuas explains that, because like this, eventually, as we go through the Derasha, it's going to allow us to say that both Seh and Chamur are being darshan in a way of im eina inyan. Otherwise, if we put chamur first, we would have said chamur is needed to teach us something that chamur itself includes, and seh would have been for one of those im eina inyan. If you don't need it for this, then instead you use it for something else. Instead, the Braisa wants to show how we're going to use both of them for im eina inyan, to say that we didn't need that particular item itself, but rather we're using it to darshan something similar but unrelated. So halmani makayim gneva. So now we would have to understand the word gneva means rabbis called dover. So far, it means to include everything. So far, that's the first stage of the argument that, because the Torah says sure and gneva and seh, then so far we've included all kinds of animals, even if they're not something that's offered on the mizbeach. Next, the question then still is, continues the Braisa, Yoima Sher Shur Seh Ugneva. In that case, the Torah could have mentioned the two kinds of animals, an ox and a sheep, Ugneva, and it would have mentioned the word Gneva, V'Hakol B'Chlal, and so far we're saying everything would have been included. So why does it mention Chamur as well? And the answer is Ilukach. But if it was so, Hayisi Omer Ma Prat Mefurish Dover Hakadosh B'Bechora, then you would have said, fine. But you know what a shur and a seh have in common? It means that besides that they can be brought on the mizbeach. And again, we said you wouldn't need seh for that because shur would already include that. But you would say it means that the animal has to be something to which the concept of bechora applies, that a bechora of it is kadosh. Afkol Dover Hakadosh B'Bechora. Therefore, it would include any animal that has Kedushas Bechor. So it would include those two, which, fine, we don't need to include them because it already says in them in the Pasuk, but Mayesh L'Cholahavi, what would we be adding in at that point? Chamur, the only other one to add would be a donkey, because that's the only other kind of animal to which Kedushas Bechor applies. Well, the Torah forestalls that. True, Oma Chamur, since the Torah actually mentions a donkey, Hare Chamur Omer. Then there you go. We already have a donkey. Therefore, we don't need to add it by means of the klal. Ha mani makayim gneva. Now, since we do have a klal, the word gneva, l'rabis kol dover, then it means that it has to include anything. Again, it's one of those inin lozet kind of things that, because we didn't need to say chamur, because we would have already learned it from the previous details, so therefore now we're meant to understand that it includes everything, even something that has nothing to do with Bechorah. Yomar Shur v'chamur seo gneva. Fine. So far we could say that it would include everything. Because we said once it said shur, then it would include anything. Because we have a klal to go with it, it means anything that goes on the mizbeach. Once it says se, it means we have a klal that includes anything that has kedushas b'chora. Once we mention chamur, it includes everything else. So far we would say that everything should be included. But the fact is, the pasuk adds another detail. It mentions chayim, that you find them a lot. So why does it need to mention that? Because ilukach, if the pasuk had mentioned only like that, if it had only said those details, shur, chamur, seh, and the word gneva, and it had not said chayim, Hayisi Omer, then you would say ma prat mefurish bali chayim. So far, everything that's been listed so far is a living animal. Af kol bali chayim. So fine, you would say other kinds of living animals are included. Ma yeshlocha lahavi shah bali chayim. So you would have thought that the klal teaches you that it includes other animals as well. True Omer chayim, but then the pasuk actually says chayim hare chayim Omer. Then there you go. Automatically, it includes all animals, or bali chayim is a girsa that goes habach buns over here. So again, we don't need the klal from the word gneva to teach us that it includes animals, because animals are anyway explicitly mentioned in the pasuk. Ha mani makayim gneva l'rabis kol dover. Therefore, the word gneva has to include everything else, even creatures that don't have, even things that don't have any life, even inanimate objects. So based on that limud, so now the Tana of the earlier Braisa, again, who said that without this pasuk we don't have any source for a gan of paint, a shlume kefil for everything, well, now we have our source. The way that Tana Dvechizkiya parsed this pasuk and broke it apart and showed how we douchen from it everything. So that's the limud. Tosfos has a long discussion over here about the mechanism that we've worked over here. Tosfos brings a question from Rav Osher Miluna. Luna is a city in the south of France. Back then, that area was called Provincia or Provence. You had the famous Chacham, you had the famous Chachmei Provincia who lived over there. So one of them named Rav Osher Miluna asked the Rav about how this is supposed to work over here. What do you mean that once we have we're saying that so far we're adding everything, but the fact is that soon the Gemara is going to explain that we're actually talking about a klal, a prat, a klal over here. So how exactly are we including everything? Isn't a klal, a prat, a klal? Doesn't it mean, after all, that you can only include things that are fairly similar to the things mentioned over there, and that would still only include animals? And he goes on to ask more details about that. The word chayim could also, the Gemara on Amud Beis is going to talk about, that it can mean something important. And he asks a whole bunch of questions on the details of how exactly the Braisa is learning this limud. One point is that now the Gemara is going to go and analyze the Braisa in some detail. But one thing is, the Re starts by saying that maybe it's actually not really. So far we've understood that the Braisa is all a series of rhetorical questions and answers that's the same Tana all going through and presenting a logical argument like that step by step. But now the Rish says, maybe not actually, maybe in fact what we have over here is a questioner and an answer, and maybe at times the questioner didn't understand the answer that he was being given, and therefore he asks the question again. And then he goes on to explain in another way, and he has a whole different explanation of the upcoming sugya. All right. So let's start analyzing that braisa. Omamar yoima shur of nega. The braisa had started by saying that it could have just said the word shur and the word gneva. So what do you mean? Miksiv shur of gneva? The fact is it doesn't say in the pasuk in that order. It doesn't say shur first and then gneva, where there we would understand it as a prakiflau. Gneva v'shur hu dechdim. It says it. First, it says gneva, im himotzi motzi biyodei ha-gneva, if the stolen object is found in his possession. And only then does it mention the shur and the other animals. So if anything, that wouldn't be a klal of prat, where there we would say that we broaden it and include everything. Just the opposite, it would be a klal of prat, which means that we limit it only to what it says in the prat. You're going to argue that maybe this is one of those if it had said kind of thing. You could say ilu nema shur of gneva. Maybe the braisa is saying that if it had said it in the order of shur and gneva, then we would have understood that it means everything, and then we have to figure out why it adds also shamur and seh. But no, what do you mean ilu nema shur of gneva umi matis amet ma prat mafurish? What do you mean? If it's said it in the order, first shur and then gneva, then what are you talking about? Broadening from the prat and saying that you find things in which it's similar to the prat and you're going to add in them, then have a shur prat or gneva klal. If it had said it in the order, shur and then gneva, then you have a prat or klal. And the rule is nasa klal musaf ala prat. So what it means is the klal comes to add to the prat. And in that case, you're including everything. Which, in that case, the reason why you have a prat at the beginning, we've learned back in the Masechta Nazir that an idea behind that is that otherwise, without the prat beforehand, you would have thought that maybe the klal itself is meant to be restricted in one way or another based on some other limud, and therefore the prat before that tells you that no, it means that the Torah actually wants you to broaden the klal altogether. So what are you talking about over here? The way it actually says in the pasuk is gneva and then shur, which is a klal of prat. That would tell us to limit ourselves only to the prat that it mentions. You're going to say that it means if the pasuk had put shur first and then gneva, well, then you have the opposite problem. Then it's going to be a complete klal. Then you're not excluding anything at all. So here we have the braisa saying that you do that with just the words gneva and shur, you would have included only some things, but not everything, and therefore we have the rest of the details in the pasuk. Well, that's not how prat or klal or klal or prat works. So what does the braisa mean? So we would have said, if it said shur and then gneva, we would have said prat or klal, nasa klal musaf ala prat, means the klal comes to add to the prat, v'yisrabelahu komili, and we would add everything else. So what does the braisa mean? What it says, we would have thought to only add animals that are brought as korbanos, and therefore mentioned seh, and we would have thought only animals that are kodesh v'bechorah, and therefore it adds chamur, etc. If you have a prat or klal, you don't need all of that. A prat or klal means that you add everything automatically. So the Gemara answers, the Braisa is talking about the order in which it says in the Pasuk. Even though the Braisa had mentioned the word shur of gneva, it's not meant to imply if it had said shur and then gneva. It means in the order in which where it actually says in the Pasuk, gneva first, which is the klal, and then shur, which is the prat. You're going to say, What do you mean? Then you would think to include everything, or that you're going according to the prat. Have a gneva klal, a shur prat. Don't you have a problem then? The way it actually says in the pasuk means that. You're going to say when the braisa said if it had said shur and gneva, it's not being precise. It meant if it says gneva first and then shur. But the question is, which is actually how it says in the pasuk. The problem is that's only a prat. That's only a klal of prat. have a Lagneva Klal, the Shur Prat. The result is you have a Klal of Prat, and the rule is Klal of Prat in Bechlal Elamash of a Prat. So it means we limit it only to the Prat. And again, the idea, the reason why the Torah didn't just mention the Prat was to teach us not to learn, not to broaden it using a Binyan Av or something. So, Shur Ein Midi Achrin Aloy. In that case, then we would include only a Shur. Why is the Braisa even thinking to begin with that from the word Shur, we would have included any other animal that could be brought as a carbon? So the answer is Omar Rava, Tana Achayim Kasamichle. The answer is the Tana, when he begins the Braisa, is also relying on the fact that it says further on in the Pasuk, Chayim, so therefore, klalu pratu klal karmalei. So to begin with, the braisa is meaning to use a klalu pratu klal. And therefore, so klalu pratu klal. That's how it works. We look for what the prat has in common, and we generalize from that. Well, the Gemara asks. So Rabbi is going to continue in a minute with his explanation, but first the Gemara interjects. The problem is, how can you understand this pasuk as a klal of prat or klal? The problem is, a classic klal of prat or klal, like we've learned before, for example, we talked about yesterday as far as using Maisa Shedim. The klal was, v'nasata ha-kesef v'chol asher ta'aben nafshecha, anything that you desire. Then it mentioned four specifics. And then it said, v'chol asher tish'ocha nafshecha, anything that your soul requests. So the second klal includes, the second klal covers the same ground as the first klal. Both of them are including anything you might want to eat, and therefore we douse in as a klal, the prat klal, and we say that we douse in the four things in the middle, and we say that we create a class of things that includes those. But here, what do we have? Gneva, the word gneva by itself would include anything that's stolen. The word chayim, on the other hand, doesn't include anything. It includes only living creatures. So then, isn't the problem then that you don't have the second klal is not identical to the first one? So how are we doushening that as a klal of prat to klal? And the answer is Rava is going to tell you, you can say that the Tana of this Braisa agrees with Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, who holds that such a thing is legitimate to Darshan as a klal of prat to klal. There's a Gemara in Chulin that talks about certain details of how we know what kind of locusts are mutter to eat. And you have a something over there that the Gemara mentions can be doushin as a klal or prat to klal, but there you have this kind of thing where the second klal doesn't cover the same ground as the first klal. And the Gemara says over there that that's not a problem. Tanit Veda Lishmol holds that that's a legitimate klal or prat to klal. So, fine. So the Tana of this Braisa holds the same way. Therefore, to begin with, when he first begins analyzing the pasuk, he knows that we have a klal of prat to klal here. So now Rava says, let's go through the Braisa again, and we're going now in light of what we understood. Then we're going to understand the stepwise logic that the Braisa is going through. One consideration is we have to figure like this. At the end of the Braisa, when it said that if it had only said Gneva and Shur, Hamur and Seth, then at that point we would have known to include other animals. So why does it say Chayim? Means we douchen from that word Chayim to include everything else. Well, now we're saying we're not supposed to do it that way. The fact is we need the Chayim as the second klal of the klal of prat klal. So Rava explains we have to understand what the Braisa meant was like this. Given that it says Gneva and Shur Hamur and Seh and the word Chayim, so already we have a klal of prat to klal, and we're going to include, all kinds of things. So im hi motze si motze lomali. So why does the Torah, to begin with, at the beginning of the pasuk, say im hi motze ti motze, if it is found, which itself already implies a klal that anything that would be found in his possession. Anything that would be found in his possession is going to be included in the din of Kate. So now that we understand that the Braise is going to, that the Braise is also implicitly talking about that part of the, that part of the pasuk. So now let's go through the whole Braise and understand what it meant. So Rava explains like this. The Braise is saying, the Torah could have said, Shur and the word Gneva and Chaim, Vakol B'chlal, and then we would be using it as a Klal or Prat Klal, because after all, the Torah says it in that order. It says Shur to Gneva, it really means Gneva B'shur, but in other words, we would have said, if it had said Shur and then Gneva, So we would have had a klal prat to klal. So then we would have included anything that's me'ena prat. But the problem is me'ena prat would be a very narrow definition. Ilu kein ha'yisirema ma prat b'chodesh davar akorav v'gabe mizbeach. Then it would only include things that can be brought on the mizbeach af kol akorav v'gabe mizbeach. So then it would include any other animal that's brought on the mizbeach. And you would say ma yesh lahavi seh. Now you would say, why would we bring, what else would we have brought in from that klal of prat? The klal then would be sheep, because that's the only other animal, well, sheep and goats, but for many purposes we consider them the same thing in halacha. So we would have included them as well. The point is what we're saying is Rava is now explaining, before we didn't know we had a klal of prat to klal here. So we were wondering, how is the Braise thinking to add one thing and then another? Either we have a klal of prat and it includes only the prat, or it's a prat to klal and we include everything. Now we're saying that we didn't realize before that the Braise actually is doubting the whole thing using a klal of prat to klal. Which again, we said that relies on the point that we're saying that the second klal, chayim, is actually considered a klal, which requires us to say that we agree with Tana Dveda Bishmol, who says that such a thing is a valid klal. So once we're understanding that we're doing a klal, a prat or klal, now we figure like this. Well, then the klal would be, the prat is a shur. So therefore, what would we include that's similar to a shur? Well, on the face of it, the most narrow definition of something similar to a shur is something else that can be brought on the mizbeach, which would include sheep. Well, the pasuk does mention sheep. Hare se'omer. So therefore, it already says sheep. So therefore, obviously, we're not meant to include sheep from the klal of prat klal. Ha, mani, makayim, gneva. So what are we learning from the word gneva? In other words, what are we adding because of the klal? Tosfos points out over here, the fact is, usually when we darish in a klal of prat klal, it's really the second klal that's the more important one. It's because of that that allows us to broaden the category. In other words, again, klal would tell us everything. Prat would tell us limited only to the one specific thing. And then when you have the klal afterwards, then you're re-broadening it, but not all the way to include everything. Otherwise, you would have just had a klal, but rather to include things that are similar to the prat. It's the second klal that puts us on the alert and tells us this is what you should be adding other things besides for the prat. Find what the prat has, find the characteristic of the prat, and find other things that have the same characteristic. So usually the Gemara would do that way, but here the Braise is focusing on the first one, and Tosfos explains, because after all, the second prat, we said, is more limited. It says only the word chayim, which means only living animals. So you would have thought that, if you only had that, then you would think that you would think you're only including living animals, only because there was the first klal that's a gneva that includes everything. Does that tell us that also ultimately from chayim, we're going to say that chayim is similar to gneva in that sense and being used as a klal? We wouldn't have known, in other words, that it's meant to be used as a klal had it not been, even according to Tana Dveda Bishmol, had it not been for the word, for the word gneva at the beginning of the pasuk. So Rava is saying, this is what the Braise means then. So what are we learning from the fact that we have a klal there, and in this case, from the word gneva, l'rabis kol davar, then we would say that includes other things also that are not brought on the mizbeach. Because again, the only thing we would have included by a klal or prat or klal is sheep, and we already have sheep stated in the pasuk. Well, then the Braise continues, in that case, could have just said those details and everything would have been included. Because again, we would have said gneva is a klal, shur and seh are prat, Chayim is another klal, based on Tanit Bein Rabbi Shmuel, and therefore we would include everything. So why isn't that enough? And the answer is, if it was so, then you would say, Asher and Seh also have this in common, that they're both animals to which Bechorah applies. So you would think to include only creatures to which Bechorah applies. In that case, the only other one that would be added that wasn't there so far was a donkey. But then it says the word donkey in the pasuk, so therefore we already have that, and therefore we're not adding that from the klal of protocol. So continues the Braisa, since we have a klal of protocol, and we know it has to be teaching us something extra, and it can't be the fact that it's a chamur, because it says that in the pasuk, therefore we can include everything. But the Braisa is still asking if you're darshaning as a klal of protocol. Fine, we can't draw the prat too narrowly because we already have three pratim that can be brought as a korban, or that it's kodesh b'b'chora, or again, once it says chamur, we're obviously not including only that, so it's meant to include other things as well. But still, yoy magnev v'shur v'seh v'chamur v'chayim v'akol b'chlal. At that point, why do we need everything is already included. So now the Braisa is, what else do we need in the pasuk to include everything else? The problem is ilu kain, but if it's said like that without the words himotze ha'isiyem ma prat mafurish balachayim afkol balachayim, then he would say, okay, so it applies only to living animals, and therefore we need the himotze timotze to tell us that the klal of prat, the klal that follows it, is including everything. So that the Braisa says, Ma yesh l'chol l'hobi. So what would you have said that you're including? You would have said, Sha b'alechayim, you're including other animals. Shu'im achayim, are chayim omer. So again, the chayim is kind of another prat. The chayim over here is another prat, kind of. So therefore, so that includes chayim, so we're already including clearly all living animals. So what are we doing with the fact that we have a klal of prat to klal here, beginning with gneva, l'rabis kol davar, then already we have to include everything. Now, in the previous sugya that we learned yesterday, we had, the Gemara had brought up the possibility that maybe we could say there's a difference between animals and birds, because we said that birds don't have, between kosher and non-kosher birds, where only kosher birds have a type of tumah. But at this point, Tosfos says that the Tana is assuming that we're not gonna start drawing distinctions as far as the presence or absence of Torah. So therefore, we would include all animals because it says chayim halmani mekayim gneva l'rabbis kol davar. So the word gneva comes to include everything else. In other words, the point is, again, you don't need a klal of prat klal to add living animals because the word chayim itself means living animals. So now the Braisa is implicitly asking, this is the part that Rava is explaining, it didn't say explicitly this point in the Braisa, but now we're understanding, because we said that really the word Chaim is meant as our second klal. So im himotze simotze lomali, so why do the pasuk need to add the words im himotze simotze if it's found? So now we're left with the question, what are we doing with imhimotze tzimotze? So now we need to figure out what we're doing with the word imhimotze tzimotze. So now the imhimotze tzimotze is the end of Tanit Vechizkiya's argument, saying, given that we were trying to learn that you're including everything from the word chayim, but after all, you also have the word imhimotze tzimotze, and therefore we have to figure out what we're going to do with that. So that's how Rashi explains. He says at the end of the Rashi, v'hochi maskonim tanan v'chizkiya. This is how tanan v'chizkiya finishes off by saying that why do we need himatze tzimatze? And the answer and the implicit answer would be that we're that we're including everything with that. The Torah Chaim gives a different explanation that he says that this is actually a question that the Gemara is asking. Okay, for Tanan Vechizkiya, what is he doing with Tanan Vechizkiya? Well, the Gemara asks, Ihochi Shapir Kashalai. Well, then that's a very good question. Why does it say Im Himatze Tzimatze? According to Rava's re-understanding, re-analyzing of the Braisa, he's saying that the Braisa has left off with a question. Why does it say Im Himatze Tzimatze? If already from the Klal Prat to Klal, we've included everything. Well, yeah, that's a very good question. What is the answer to that? And the answer is Mishum de Islay Pircha. The reason is because the Braisa is implicitly saying what we were saying that you're going to learn from the word Geneva and then Shur Sechamur and then when it says Chaim, and you're going to include everything because the Islay Pircha, on the other hand, you would be able to slug that up. You would say, L'rabis kol davar mehechim kamaisilei. After all, where are you trying to learn everything? Miklal Basra. Ultimately, you're saying because you have a klal of prato klal, because you have a second klal at the end, the word chayim, klal gufe chayim ksibbe. The fact is that klal does use only the word chayim. So klal of prato klal my mahanile. So what is the klal of prato klal accomplishing for us exactly? Ilas surya kol dabar. You're going to tell us it includes everything. Ha chayim ksib. The fact is the second klal says only the word chayim. And therefore, it should include only balik chayim ein midyach reniloi. And therefore, it would include only animals. Mishum hachi itzrich im himatze. That is why the Torah needed to have the word im himatze tzimatze to tell us that it includes everything else. So again, in other words, Rava is adding this point. And Tosfos says the Braisa didn't even explicitly mention this point because it wasn't really necessary to. It's obvious once we analyze the Braisa that we're left with this question. The fact is, if you're going to learn from a klal of prat to klal, even fine, we're going to say like Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel that it counts as a klal of prat to klal, because unlike the Chachamim who disagree with him and say that the word chayim wouldn't even be a klal, and then according to them on the face of it, you'd have only a klal of prat, and they would have to douse him differently. But even if you say it's a klal of prat to klal, the fact is the second klal, which is telling us to broaden the category, is still saying only the word chayim. So, which means living creatures. So you'd still be left with the question, where are we getting to include anything else? So now the answer is that is why the pasuk says im himatze tzimatze is in order to tell us that it means anything else that's found that where we find that he stole it. The question is v'hashnei klavus tismichi adonim yinu. Well, fine, but if you're going to say it that way. So here also Tosfos mentions a follow-up question in the previous Tosfos that we said before. And I'm going to Aleph, you have the long Tosfos over there where Rabbeinu Osher Milunel asks the Ri a bunch of questions about the mechanism of the argument that the Gemara is doing over here. And Tosfos went through step by step and explained exactly what the Gemara's assumption was at each stage of the argument and what the answers were. So here Tosfos mentions a follow-up question that, after all, we said we have, even without the word himatze timatze, we said the only other thing that you would have added with the klal of prat to klal is chayim. So shouldn't we say the same as we said before? The same way, for example, we said that if it only said sure in the prat, we would have included other animals that are brought on the mizbeach, and then it says seh, and we know that, and therefore that's already mentioned explicitly, and therefore it means it has to be including something else, and so on and so forth. Well, doesn't the same thing apply once we get to chayim? We would say that chayim is including living animals, but since it says chayim means those living animals, so it can't mean that the klal of prat to klal is coming to include anything else, and therefore of necessity it includes everything else. So why don't we say that? Why do we need to invoke the words in himatze tzimatze to say that includes everything else? And Tosfos discusses the Ri's answer. Once the Gemara says that we use himate timate as part of the klal or prater klal, then sure we can include that we can use chayim for that purpose. But if we didn't have himate timate, then it wouldn't work to be able to include. We wouldn't be able to use chayim as a klal, and therefore it still requires us to have the words in himata timata in the pasuk in order to make the whole thing work. So the question now is: So at this point, what are we saying? We're saying basically we have like this: we have a klal the word gneva, we have a prat the word shur, hamur, and seh, we have another klal the word chayim, and we have two klalos one after the other: himatze timatze and hagneva. Then we have a prat. Then we have chayim, which we're saying is sort of like it can be considered a klal or it can be considered another detail of the prat. The problem is, Amri, so they ask, v'hoshnei klolos, yismichia hadadi ninu, isn't this where you have two klolos, one after the other, you have himate simate, and then gneva, and then you have the pratim, so how are you doushin as a klal or prat or klal? The answer is, Amar Ravina, pida Amri b'marav. So Ravina says the answer is that the Braisa is and Rava's explanation of the Braisa is following the system that they taught in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, kol mokum shata moitz shnei klolos asmuchim zelozer. Whenever you find something like that, instead of a klal or prat or klal, you find a klal, then another klal, then a prat. It's meant for you to rearrange the posit and take the prat and put it between them, the dunim, the klal or prat, and then judge them and douchen them as a regular klal or prat or klal. So in other words, in short, Ravina is saying that they explain that Eretz Yisrael, it doesn't matter whether the posit puts it in the order klal or prat or klal, or whether it puts it klal, klal or prat. Either way, the fact that you have two klalas and a prat makes it that we douchen it as a klal or prat or klal.
But it does matter. If the Torah puts it this way, there has to be a reason. You cannot just discard it with no explanation.
There can be some different reason why that is, but on another level of darshaning Torah, but on the level of darshaning halachas from the Torah, klal or prat or klal, it doesn't make a difference, we're saying, according to time of Rabbi Shmuel. We find an example of that. According to the Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael. We're going to learn soon, actually, we're going to learn a different opinion soon that's going to learn it differently, that's going to say that where you have a klal or prat, then we do douchen it differently. But right now, the Amri B'ma Rava are saying it doesn't make a difference. The same way, I mean, listen, you know, we have a lot of things, a lot of times where the Gemara will say, according to one man d'omer, we're douchening something a certain way, and according to the other one, we're going to say, for example, Dibur Torah Koloshim Ne'odam, the Torah is just using common human speech. The fact is, obviously, still, Hashem could have chosen to word it differently, and there's different levels of learning Torah on which we're going to understand why it says it particularly the way it does. But at least in terms of Medrash Halacha, sometimes we're going to say that there are details in there that are unnecessary or that are written one way and could have equally well been written the other way. So it is over here. Okay.
It's not an explanation.
It is. What we're saying is when it comes to Medrash Halacha, sometimes we'll have details in the Pesukim that are meant to be doubted one way as opposed to another way, and it says it in the Pesuk a certain way to teach us a Drasha, and sometimes we're going to have details in there that are not there necessary for the purpose of the Drasha and are there for other reasons. We're going to have at the bottom of the Amud, further down on the Amud, the Gemara gives another example of that. Sometimes you have a concept where we're going to say that sometimes the Torah will repeat an entire parasha, an entire din, and only because it's mentioning one particular new detail over there. So it could have mentioned only the one detail, and instead it gives the whole thing all over again. Doesn't matter. Sometimes that's the Torah's style. So the same way over here, this opinion of Amri B'ma Rava is going to say, once the Torah is giving us two klolim and a prat, it doesn't matter for the purposes of Medrash Halacha what order they come in. We can say that two klolis and a prat are equal to one klal, one prat, and one klal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right.
Okay. So the Gemara goes on. Okay, so how exactly are we darshaning it? So it goes like this. Shodi shur ben himotze litimotze. The first thing we do that is we take the so what it is actually we're taking the word himotze timotze themselves and using them as two clauses. So it's not even we're not even using the word gneva for that. We're using the word himotze timotze themselves to add the two clauses, and then shur and so forth are being used as the prat. And here, what we're going to do is we're going to take each one of the pratim and darshan it to create a separate klal of prat of klal. Tosfos points out earlier, we learned yesterday, the Gemara had an expression that sometimes we do that. The Gemara had said at the top of Samach Gimel Amud Aleph, kol chad v'chad klal of prat ba'afei nafshe darshin and like, each one can be darshan as a separate klal of prat. Tosfos pointed out over there, one reason why we would say to do that is because here it says, add individually by each one. Mishur ad chamur ad se. Unlike other klala prata klala, where the Torah gives us multiple paratim and it doesn't have the word ad between them, here it does. And Tosfos have discussed there other reasons why we would think to dash in this way. But this is what we're going to do. So we do like this. We put it says, the pasuk says himotze timotze, which are two klalas, and then it says the shur and chamur and so forth, which are the paratim. What we're doing is we're rearranging it. We're taking the word shur, putting it between the word himotze and timotze. So that gives us a klal of prat klal. La suya mai. Now we have to figure out what would that come to include. Ilasuya balachayim. If it's coming to include other animals, then you don't need mechayim nafka. You have the word chayim at the end of the pasuk, and we know to include other animals. Elalasuya davar she'en balachayim. So it means to include something that's not living. Meaning that you're doushing like this. Ma prat mefurash. What is specific about the prat? So far, we're focusing only on the one prat, the shur. Dovra metalto begufay mamon. It's something that's movable and that has intrinsic value. Afko dovra metalto begufay mamon. So the same thing, anything else that is movable and that has intrinsic value, then you'd be chayav keifa for that. Then we do the next klal of prat klal, which is shadi chamur ben himotze l'timotze. Now we go back to the himotze timotze and we put the word chamur between them. We picture as though the pasuk said in himotze chamur timotze, which gives us another klal of prat klal. La'asuya mai, and again, what would that be including? I la'asuya davar she'en balechayim mishur nafka. It can include things that are not living because that already we learned from the previous klal of prat klal involving shur. El la'asuya davar mesuyam. Rather, we have to say it includes a davar mesuyam. Now, we talked about yesterday what Dovah Masuyam is. Rashi had explained, and he goes to Shutasi over here, that it means only something that has a simen. If it doesn't have a simen, and after all, Rashi points out, animals don't often have simen on him. Sometimes you'll have an animal with a noticeable simen on it, but not always. So now the word chamur is now the klal of prat klal, including the word chamur, is coming to include that it applies to anything that's a Dovah Masuyam, only where there's a simen on it, and not otherwise. Tosfos over here brings actually a different girsa that says the opposite of ma'uti davar she'en mesuyam. It comes to exclude something that is not mesuyam. Now, Tosfos earlier, when we learned this word davar mesuyam on Samach Gimel Amud Aleph, Tosfos had argued on Rashi and said davar mesuyam does not mean an item that has a simen, and davar she'en mesuyam would be an item that doesn't have a simen, because what's the difference? So Tosfos had discussed that it meant davar mesuyam, meant an object that has a known quantity, as opposed to when one person is claiming an unknown quantity of something, then that would be a davar she'en mesuyam. And we talked also that the Ramban has another explanation of davar mesuyam, and davar she'en mesuyam means a whole object as opposed to a part of one. Anyway, so here the Gemara would be saying, la suya, davar mesuyam, would be to include anything else that is in that category of mesuyam, or la ma'uti, davar she'en mesuyam, would amount to the same thing. It means to exclude anything which is not mesuyam according to any of those definitions. So then the question is, okay, well, so far so good, but ihochi selamali. Okay, well then, so you're going to tell me that that's how we're doing it. We're taking the shur individually and using it for a klal or prat klal, and we're taking the se individually and using it, we're taking the chamur and using it individually for a klal or prat klal, then what are we doing with the se? What else do we need the se to add? What else do we need to what else do we need to include from the se at this point? So no. Rather, we can't understand that the Braisa is meaning that way, to say that we're going to darshan as a klal of prata klal, ela riba umiyat v'ribahu. Rather, we have to understand that all this time we've been talking in terms of klal of prata klal, now we have to understand instead that actually we're talking about a different midah called riba umiyat v'ribah. Which is, as we've learned before, what that means is, unlike a klal of prat of klal, where it means that we're going to broaden things from the prat. That's why we have the klal afterwards. But we're only going to include things that are fairly similar to the prat. Instead, what we're going to do is now we're going to darshan with a ribui miyuk ribui, and we're going to say, therefore, that we're including almost everything, and there's only a couple of things that we're excluding, as we're going to go on to say. Kiritonet ve'ra b'shmol. As Tanna Dvei Rabbi Shmuel explains that you have a similar kind of thing, a different pasuk, which on the face of it is a klal of prat of klal, but you have a certain phrase there in the pasuk that makes it, that alerts us to instead treat it as a ribui, miyot ribui. So we have the same way over here, as we're saying that the seh over here, because we have the two klalim and then the prat, then that's meant to tell us, not like we said before, not like the Ami B'Ma'arava said, that it means it still is a klal of prat of klal. We just rearrange the pasuk, but rather, Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel says that actually what we're doing is we're using a whole different midah called ribui miyot ribui. Mind you, I mean, Rabbi Shmuel, we say every day Braisa Rabbi Shmuel, who doesn't mention that as one of the Yud Gimel midahs. So the Ritva explains he would still explain that it's a sub detail of klal of prat of klal. And the Teres Chaim would say that maybe Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Shmuel are not the same opinion. Rabbi Shmuel would be obviously the head of Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, but his Talmidim, who taught Braisis over there, may disagree with him and hold that there's another Midah Chatur in the Dreshes Ben. Anyway, the Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, so Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel teaches like this. The Pasuk says about, we know that water creatures, in order to be kosher, have to have fins and scales. And the Pasuk says, b'mayim b'mayim shnei panim. Twice in a row, the Torah mentions the concept that these creatures are in water. The Pasuk says, anything that lives, this you can eat from anything that mikol asher b'mayim, anything that's in the water, anything that has fins and scales, b'mayim, in the water. So therefore, so the word b'mayim means anything else that means any kind of water, whether we're talking about rivers or lakes or things like that, or whether we're talking about, for example, ponds that are not ponds or water pits or whatever that aren't connected with other water sources. So he says b'mayim b'mayim or shnei pamim, since it says b'mayim one after the other. And only afterwards does it mention the details by Yamu Vanacholim in the seas and in the rivers. Then you learn from that. Ein zeh klal prat ela ribu miyot ribui. Therefore, it's not. Therefore, it means it's not a klal prat a klal. It's a ribui miyot ribui, and therefore that includes riba hakol. So it includes everything. Therefore, Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel says in that sugya in Cholin, what it means therefore is. That the rules that you need fins and scales on water creatures applies not only to seas and rivers and lakes and bodies of water like that. It includes even, for example, stagnant ponds or water holes or things like that. That they are also, any creature that you find in them is going to have fins and scales in order to be kosher. As opposed to, the Gemara mentions another opinion over there of Rabbi Akiva, I think, who says that we don't darshan it that way. And he says that, in fact, if you have, let's say, for example, a barrel of water or a pit of water, which is not like Yamim and Necholim, and then you found creatures in there that don't have fins and scales, as long as they remained in the water all the time, you would be allowed to drink them, which is, by the way, the halacha. You are, in principle, if you're drinking from a water hole like that or from a barrel like that, and there are little creepy, crawly creatures in there that don't have fins and scales, you would actually be allowed to drink the water or whatever liquid it is together with them, because they, as long as you know they were in the liquid the whole time. Now that doesn't apply to oceans and rivers and lakes and things like that. Some years ago when they had the whole business that came up with copepods in the water in the New York City water system. So there was a lot of discussion. You don't have this heter of stagnant bodies of water, because that doesn't apply over here. New York City's water comes from a reservoir, which is part of a whole hydrological system. But you have other considerations, that there was some rabbanim that said the fact is you don't really see them with the naked eye. At least you don't see them as creatures. So whatever, there was a lot of discussion about that at the time. But the point is, Rabbi Shmuel, Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, is saying that when you have two klolis and then a prat, then you don't darshan it as a klal or prat to klal. Instead, you darshan it as a ribui miut ribui. So therefore, my rabbi. So what are we including? Rabbi Komili. At this point, then, the ribui would tell us to include everything. So ihochi kolani prati lomali. Well, then, what do we need the pratim for? And the answer is because chadlam uti karka. One of those pratim. We have three pratim. Shur hamur seh. One of them teaches us to exclude land, which, as we learned at the beginning of the parak, the concept of Hashlomi Kefal doesn't apply. One person steals the other one's land. V'chadlam oti avodim, another one to exclude avodim. As a person steals the other one's slave. V'chadlam oti shoris, and the third one comes to exclude shoris. As far as the words gneva v'chayim, as far as what are we doing with the word gneva, which before we were understanding as a klal, and the word chayim, which we were also understanding as a klal, those are actually the chidur rab. Those actually teach us a whole different drasha, namely what Rab says. De omer, where Rab says, ach yev keren ke'en shaganav. You have to make alive the keren in a way similar to what you stole. Later on in the perek, we're going to talk about, suppose, for example, a person stole an animal, and during the time that it was in his possession, it became weaker, or it became, its value went down for any reason, then you pay according to its value at the time of gneva. So you would say the animal was worth 100 when it was stolen. By the time you're getting ready to return it, it's worth only 90. Now you still have to reimburse the extra 10 as well. We learn that from the words chayim and from the words gneva and chayim, that the payment for the gneva has to be similar, has to be chayim, has to be as alive as possible. Okay. So therefore, now with all of that, we've analyzed in full the Braisa of Tonid Vechizkiah that we started this part of the sugya with, and we've explained then in the end how we're learning from it that everything, that you're chayiv and kefal for everything, with the exceptions of land and avodim and shtoris, as we just discussed. So, in fact, the Rashba says that the whole discussion that the Gemara had on Amud Aleph and the beginning of this and the beginning of Amud Beis to discuss, well, how exactly are we using the Tanit Vechizkiah was saying, how are we using the Klal Prat Klal to discuss all these things? Actually, it comes out then, based on what the Gemara is saying over here, that Tanit Vechizkiah is really saying, on the contrary, don't think to Darshan as a Klal Prat Klal, because if you do, you're going to end up stuck at some point. You're not going to understand what to do with the word himotze, or with the word set. So therefore, that forces us to say, the very fact, that very analysis forces us to say, once we're done with it, that instead of a klal prat klal, we're doing a ribui miut ribui. Okay, so the Gemara says, ulamanda omer chad beganav v'chad betoin tainas ganav. Now, all of this was only necessary according to the opinion back on Samach Gimel Omid Beis that there were two psukim in connection with Shomrim that mention a ganav paying kefil, and we said according to that opinion, both of them were talking about toin tainas ganav, and therefore we needed a different pasuk to teach us about a regular ganav having to pay kefil for everything, which is what we just worked out. So now, going back to the other opinion, that says that the chad beganav chad betoin tainas ganav, he says of the two psukim as far as a shomer that mentioned a ganav paying kefil, one is talking about a regular ganav, the other one's talking about a shomer. So then the ganav atzmei naftalim imi motzei ganav, and he's learning the concept that a regular ganav has to pay kefil from the words in the pasuk imi motzei ganav. If the ganav is found, well then according to him, hi imi motzei timotzei my darish bay. What is he doing with the word imi motzei timotzei, which we just said was the key to understanding the pasuk? Well, the pasuk that we were just analyzing in great detail, and to understand that it includes that everything is chayav kefil. So according to the opinion that you learn that the ganav, that a regular ganav pays kefil for everything else, we learn it from a few pasukim later, what is he doing with this pasuk? The answer is, mibor lechidud Rava Bar Ahilai. He uses it to teach us what Rava Bar Ahilai says. The Omer Rava Bar Ahilai, my time of the Rav, the Omer Moed B'Knas V'Achakach Bo Eidim Potter. Now, later on in the parak, we've touched on this before, but we're going to have more discussion about it in detail later in the parak. You have like this. We know if a person is high of Knas, and then he comes to Beis Din and is moed on it, we know he's Potter. Everybody agrees with that. So say, for example, Kefil is an example of Knas. If a Ganav were to come to Beis Din ahead of any Edim and admit that he had stolen, we would have him pay only the Keren, only the actual amount he stole, not the Kefil. Everybody agrees to that. Now, what happens if he admitted it in Beis Din, and then Edim came and said that that this is what he did? So now you have a machlokas, Rav and Shmuel, whether he's chayiv in the kapel. So Rav Bar Eli says, where does Rav get the point that if he admitted to it and then Edim came, he would be potter from paying? In other words, because you could look at it the other way. The fact is, Edim came and said that he did it. Why shouldn't we mechayiv him in the knas? Where does Rav say otherwise? So Rav Bar Eli says, based on this pasuk, dichtiv imi matzei timatzei. The pasuk says, if found, there is found. And that means, im hi motzei be'edim, so it was found to begin with by edim, ti motzei b'dayonim, and it was found by the dayonim that he's chayev to pay kapel. Therefore, that excludes the case where he comes to Beis Din himself and says that he's a Rosha and says that he's a Knas. So Rav would understand the pasuk in him motzei timotzei. It means that the only things that can be involved over there are Edim and Beis Din. No, not nothing. That those are the only ways we know what happened and what he's chayav to pay, not where he himself says that he's chayav to pay. Well, Ulaman de Omer Tarvaya Baton Tanis Ganav Hai Jahai Imimotsi Timotsi Mapakal Ganav Atmai. Well, back to then the other opinion that says that the two Pesukim about a Shomer are referring to Toin Tainus Ganev, and he says that you need Himimotze Timotze to teach us about the regular Ganev, as in the whole Sugya that we just worked out, Marshiat Memonolon. Well, according to that opinion, how do we know that if he says that he's guilty, he's potter from Kaper? And the answer is he's going to learn from, because the pasuk says, May Asher Yarshiun Alekin. The pasuk says, the one whom the Dayanim declare guilty is chayav to pay Kaper, Veloyam Ashiyas Atma, not if he declares himself guilty by admitting. Okay. Well, back to then the other opinion. If he mutze to mutze, according to one opinion, means that it excludes the case where he's admitting to himself. Hi, Asher Yashion my Darishbe. What is he doing with the words Asher Yashion? That implies that only when the Dayanim declare him guilty is he chayev. And the answer is Amalach. He'll answer you. Hahumi Beilu, the mode of Knas, the potter, that pasuk is teaching us only about the case where he's moedim a knas and no edim ever showed up that he's potter. So in other words, he would say that himotze timotze teaches us that if he admitted, even though edim later on came, he's potter. The second pasuk asher yashion would just mean, in other words, that in the first place where he admits, then that makes him potter. And Rashi explains, in other words, that if we only had one pasuk, we would have understood it to mean only when Edom don't come, he's potter, and we would think, but if Edom come, he's going to be chayev, and therefore, and according to Rav, that's not so, and therefore, when you appoint to him, we need two pasukim, where the one to tell us where there are Edom afterwards, and the other to tell us where there are no Edom afterwards. So the Gemara says, Ulamanda omachad v'ganav achad v'toyin tainas ganav, d'nafgale ganav mehosam. Well then, according to the opinion that says the two psukim by a shomer, one's talking about a ganav, and the other's talking about a toyin tainas ganav, and he says the concept that a ganav pays kefil, and he learns from the word imimotze ganav. So bishleima imimotze timotze l'chadirov av arhelai. So the words imimotze timotze he's using to teach us what Rav Bar Eli says, this concept that if he admits and later on Edom come, that he still remains potter from the Knas. But you can ask kolhani krati, avo kolhani krati lomali, but why do you need all these other details, the shur, the chamur, the seh? And the answer is he doesn't have a problem with it. Because the Tanit Veda Bishmal, this would be the way Tanit Veda Bishmal says. The Tanit Veda Bishmal, call parasha shenem of initiatives many times when you find something, when you find a parasha regarding a din in the Torah that's said once and repeated a second time, lo nishnis elo davashnis chadishba, it's only repeated because there's one particular new detail that's being added, and the other details are just, they are kind of along for the ride, like we were saying before. So therefore, we can say the same thing over here. According to this opinion, it only needed to say imotze timotze. Once it does that, then it adds the details about what kinds of things he's chayav for, even though we already know that from the other pasuk, because that's the style of the Torah sometimes, that it has to repeat something, and it'll add the details as well, even though really there's only one particular detail that we need to know that we didn't have before. So either opinion has ways of working out what each pasuk is being used for. So therefore, we've covered all our bases with that. Now the next thing we need to figure out, which we'll take up in the Gemara tomorrow, is how indeed do we know that a ganav is chayav kefil, even if there's no shavua, unlike toin tainas ganav, where we established before that toin tainas ganav requires a false shavua in order to be chayav. So that, and the continuation of this discussion, we'll take up on Motzei Shabbos, Be'ez Hashem.